Welcome to The PA Is In, the show created by PAs for PAs, where codependency with your supervising physician is a thing of the past, optimal team practice is the future, and physician associate has taken the place of physician assistant as the professional title of choice. I'm Tracy Bingaman, and I'm obsessed with redefining what success as a PA looks like and what it feels like. Here you'll find the mindset shifts, systems, and processes I use to escape healthcare burnout and integrate my work into my life. Work-life balance is a myth, and an integrated life where you thrive professionally, not a balancing act, is the goal here. My mission is to help you to grow into a unicorn PA who loves their job, has abundant energy, time to spare, and work optional financial freedom. The PA is in. When is the last time that you felt truly joyful? Whether at work or at home, having joy in our life and finding the reason that we are passionate and living our lives on purpose is so important. I love any discussion that reminds us that we are people and also providers, that we may have been called to be PAs and to practice medicine, but also that our wellness and our physical and mental health are absolutely have to be a priority. Jennifer Orozco is the former president and current CMO of the AAPA. She's going to share with us her career path to getting to that place and remind us that even the people that seem like they are doing all the things still have to ask for help. Without further ado, here she is, Jennifer Orozco. Jennifer, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I would love it if you could just take a moment and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do now and what you used to do for the AAPA.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I am the Chief Medical Officer and the Senior Vice President of Clinical Affairs for the American Academy of Physician Associates. I am a PA by background, as most know. For the last 20 years, majority of my career was in vascular surgery. I consider myself a recovered director of advanced practice providers. I had about 400 APRNs and PAs that I was responsible for at a large academic center in Chicago. I was also an assistant professor and a faculty there and helped start the PA program there many, many years ago. So it seems so long ago, but I am excited to be with the Academy now, where I'm responsible for the Department of Clinical Affairs. And in clinical affairs, the easiest way to describe it is we have three divisions. One is all of our national health priorities. One is all of our health equity and DE&I work. And the other is all of our strategic partnerships and business development. So it's a lot, but you know, every day I get to go and do the work that I love, and that feels really, really good, and do it on a much larger scale at the national level, which is just incredible and has been eye-opening and exciting thus far. And so I'm looking forward to all the work we're going to continue to do.
Sure. I would love it if you could tell us a little bit about your transition from practicing clinically, from leading this department to sort of pivoting out of that clinical space and into something that is largely unknown to many people who are spending their days at the bedside or in the OR doing things sort of boots on the ground as providers.
Yeah. You know, that transition for me happened probably about 7 or 8 years into me being a PA. And it happened by accident. It wasn't on purpose. I didn't wake up and say, oh, I'm done with clinical practice. I want to do something else. It really happened organically at the medical center that I worked at. And I started being told no. I always tell this story. I was doing things that I knew were well within my scope. And I started to get pushback in various different parts of the organization. And, and usually it was that PAs can't do that, or that's against the policy. And I'd say, well, show me where the policy is, or show me where it says PAs can't do that. And nobody usually could. And so I was usually on a hunt from either a state law or a policy perspective in the organization. We didn't have a lot of PAs in the organization at the time. I was the first one ever in vascular surgery for the hospital. And so it was really a place of helping people understand. And so thus my advocacy career began unintentionally. And I think over time we transitioned slowly. The more they realized in terms of knowledge and in terms of driving change, the more my role transitioned from clinical to administrative and faculty. And every year they took a little, I say they, meaning the organization asked me to do a little bit more. So in the beginning, it was 25%, then it turned into 50%, then it turned into 75%. And it really was just something that fit well with me. And I worked with several mentors over many years and just really explored what I love to do in medicine and what I was good at. And I was really great at vascular surgery. I loved it. I loved patients. But this was also really exciting and allowed me to drive change in different ways that were bigger than myself. And so that's sort of how I ended up here, I guess, after 20 years. And, you know, I had people along the way who really pushed me outside my boundaries to think differently. Which I believe is why I'm here.
Yeah. I think there is such power in holding people in positions of authority accountable to some degree. So when they say PAs can't, or we've never, or it's always been, and you say, prove it, what you're sort of asking is like, let's explore this together, because you're saying it's not allowed. But what I know is it should be if it isn't formally already. And so sort of saying, we're going to hold up what we know clinically is sound and reasonable and what PAs have been known and shown to do in the past. And we're going to challenge the assumption that this has to be certain, you know, a physician or has always been done a certain way. Just because it's always been done a certain way doesn't mean it needs to continue to be done that way.
Yeah. Well, and I will say early, I think it was about me, right? And so when I was a young PA, it was about what I couldn't do. And I was very upset by that. And then I think quickly what I discovered was I became very frustrated by the system and how inefficient it was and how overburdensome it was. And patients were waiting and suffering. And really my thought process shifted from me to the patients, right? And why am I doing, what is my purpose? Why am I pushing for PAs or NPs and whoever at the time to be able to work the way that they were educated and trained to work? And it was because patients were waiting for 3 hours in my waiting room, or that I couldn't get them into the clinic for 2 months, and they were losing limbs or their life, depending on what was going on. And so, you know, I think when you start and you're young and your career looks very different, and then as you experience and, you know, gain perspective over time, that very much transitions and puts you in new places that you didn't really think were possible.
Yeah. Were there pieces of this transition? I know you kind of alluded to this earlier where you said there were people along the way that pushed slash encouraged you to really step outside that comfort zone. Were there situations where you ended up at the table and then were sitting at the table questioning, am I qualified to be at this table? Is this where I'm supposed to be?
Oh yeah. So many times. I think that still happens sometimes. I can't believe I'm sitting at tables, but I realize, you know, I am qualified to be there. Yeah, it did. And, you know, I credit a lot of my success, internally. I worked at an organization called Rush University Medical Center, and they were very inclusive. They are a very inclusive organization. That was always their perspective. And the physicians and the nurses that I work with, were tremendously supportive. And I have to give credit actually to two former chief nursing officers were the ones who pushed me to think differently and to help me recognize skill set that I have, but to also challenge the status quo. And, you know, one in particular gave me my first opportunity as director. But the other one really has, after I became director, her name is Dr. Angelique Richard, really took me to the next wave of thinking, and thinking about the larger impact outside of even just our medical center, and what that meant. And I remember, I'll tell this quick story. When she had first come to the medical center and I was director, she asked me to, we created strategy, and I put this whole beautiful strategy together that I had worked on with a bunch of people, and I was so proud of it. And I went and I presented it to her, and you know, we met, and she said, "Well, I read your strategy, and it's really, really great." And she goes, and she pushed it back across the table at me, and she goes, "This isn't who you are, and you need to think bigger and bolder." And I was devastated. Like, what? This was like, I worked so hard on this. But it was a life-changing shift for me at that point. And really, I said, "Do you understand what bigger and bolder means?" And she goes, "I know. And you're up for that challenge." And she did. And it really changed my life. And I've used that. I used that when I was on the board. I used that in a lot of my advocacy talks. I use that when I talk about healthcare, is we have to think differently. We have to think bigger and bolder. And I credit her for doing that, because I'm not sure that I would have. And she opened doors for me as a woman in an executive position. And, you know, she would bring me into conversations and take me to the next level. And that's what I try to do for others, and try to open those doors and get people to think you can do this. You have a lot of opportunity. Think bigger and better than yourself. So that was a little sidebar, but I truly credit her, and you know, I have a coach that I work with who has been instrumental in keeping my head above water. And we can talk about that with that non-work-life balance, right? She's another one that has really helped me think differently in terms of just life and my career. So,
yeah, absolutely. When you're saying that, I'm thinking, when I was a new grad provider, I feel like when you're on Google Maps and you're zoomed all the way in, I could only focus on this day, this patient, this practice, this, you know. And then you got a little bit more comfortable clinically, and you're like, I could think about the department, right? Not the whole department of surgery, just general surgery, right? And then, you know, as you become more familiar with the logistics and the business and how things are running, you start to see things that are frustrating for you, frustrating for patients, that are inefficient or outdated. And you're thinking, this isn't the best way. Like, Chick-fil-A could do this better, right? So they could, you know, what are we doing that is, you know, just draining this efficiency or making this process clunky or hard to navigate for a patient? But it does take some time, and having that capacity to zoom out and see more than just what you're doing, your clinic schedule, your day, you know, your operating room. Yeah, for sure. So, as you know, it sounds like you are someone who are doing so many things, and that you were really leaning in at this time at work and saying, I'm taking on new challenges. You know, this is outside the realm of what I was sort of traditionally expecting the career path. And I'm sure you also have a life outside of work and lots of responsibilities and things that, you know, people that you love and things that you'd like to do. How did you do all of those things? And, you know, what sort of work-life balance or integration have you found or are on your way to finding?
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say I don't think I did it well for a long time. And sometimes I still don't think I do it very well. You know, I hate to bring this up, but I think that the pandemic really changed all of us, but it was a major shift for me. And I was still practicing at that time and was a leader in the organization, but it really was a gut check after experiencing that about how important it was to have balance. You know, we lived there at the hospital 7 days a week for, you know, year and a half, and had to deal with what we had to deal with, right? All of us did. But I think coming out of that, you know, I had struggles from an anxiety, depression standpoint, as many clinicians do, and people around me did, and the physicians and the PAs and the APRNs and the nurses that I worked with all also did. And really this focus on wellness and how important it was, and how before I had just you know, said, well, whatever. I dealt with it, right? I was a single mom. I have three children. Like, I just went to work and that's what I did. And I went home and took care of my kids. And I think after going through that experience and the effect that it had on me and the people around me, I really started to think differently about how important it was to take care of myself. And I was very lucky in the fact that, and that meant, let me back up. That meant also that my children, me being with my children didn't mean that was taking care of myself. Cause that's what I always did, right? I worked and then I went home and took care of children. What's missing there is myself. And I realized that I could be a better mother and a better colleague at work if I would take better care of myself. And, you know, I had to find that time. So I picked up cycling. I was an athlete most of my life, but I got on a bike and I had a significant other at the time who was a competitive cyclist and got me into cycling. And I fell in love with it and it became my outlet and it became the place that I found my free time. My ride therapy is what I used to call it. And, you know, and just to go out there and ride, if it was an hour or half an hour and to become that athlete again was really, really important for me. And it has helped balance me out in terms of it's not medicine. It's not the profession. It's not my children. It's not my fiance. It's not all of these things. It's just me. And I am very intentional about finding time for it. And people know it. I talk about it and they know that I need that time, every day almost. And when I can't do that, then I'm sitting in silence in some way doing meditation or yoga, but I have to have that quiet of all the noise in my life in order to keep that balance. But I did not pay attention to that until later.
Thinking of a career shift in 2024, Advanced Scope is one of the only PA consulting firms optimizing your job hunt without taking away from your earning potential. They don't dip into your paycheck and your job search remains 100% confidential at no cost to you. Through partnering with practices nationwide, they know about opportunities before LinkedIn or Indeed even posts them. Connect with their CEO, Madison, today by going to advancedscopetalent.com and booking an exploratory call. Your future career and paycheck will thank you. Yeah, I think as providers, we are predisposed to put other people's needs above our own because we went into a profession that calls us to care for others. And when you add parenthood into that mix, again, other people's, you know, needs and wants become higher than yours. One of my favorite authors, Eve Rodsky, wrote a book called Unicorn Space. And that is exactly, you know, the way that you're describing cycling, the way that you're describing a hobby, you know, an activity, something that you do that is fulfilling and creative or involves movement that is just for you, that isn't spending time playing cards with your kids or driving them to practice or doing all the things that you're doing to take care of them, is really a life-giving thing that all people need, right? We know it's important for our kids because we're taking them to karate, but then we're not doing anything for ourselves, you know, during the week. So,
yeah, I mean, so much. And whatever that thing is, people have to find that thing. Maybe that thing's baking, maybe it's knitting, maybe it's watching a movie by yourself, whatever it is. And even if it's only 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you have to find that time throughout the day. I have a coach with cycling now because I get real competitive, shocker. I get competitive. And she often tells me you need to slow down because I don't, you know, as someone who worked in surgery her whole life, you know, who is also in the position that I'm in now, right? Everything is moving fast and everybody wants everything from you and your children and, you know, your work and all these, you know, and there's just not enough time in the day. And so I often, you know, she often reminds me you need to slow down, even if it's for 10 minutes. And just pausing for 10 minutes, even if it's at my desk with everything shut off, really is a game changer of relaxation, bringing that anxiety to, you know, level down. And that's the piece for yourself. So, but find your thing. I don't know, maybe it's shopping. Just don't go crazy. But, you know, whatever it is that is your thing, find it and do it and help people understand that it's your thing. I think, you know, my fiance and I often talk about that, and he knows that I need this moment to myself, and he respects that. And so, and I respect his space, and my children do too. And I think we need to talk about that and how important that is, so it catches on and becomes something that's part of everyone's life.
Absolutely. I really appreciate your vulnerability in saying, you know, number one, COVID was really hard mentally, physically, you know, it did make us reevaluate what our priorities were. For me, that thing is skiing, and ski season just started up here where I live. And my husband said to me last night, you are like a different person during the ski season because you have like this new joy. I'm like, oh yeah, like this is the thing, you know, it's just it. And it, I think it's important to remember that we wear a lot of hats, and we're clinical, or we're administrative, or we're doing whatever we're doing at work. We're showing up for our kids. We're showing up for our partner, but we are people who are doing that. And that finding that thing adds such a richness and a complexity to us as people, which we also deserve. We are not any less worthy of those things than anyone else in our life.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, you know, for me also, being a woman and being a woman in medicine, and the roles that we play as a mother and all of these things, they're different experiences for women. They just are. And I don't mean that in any sort of negative way to say that other people don't feel that, but I think women have a tremendous burden on them, and they put it on themselves often, right? I always say, who told you had to do that, right? Who told you had to be this perfect mother and this perfect colleague and this perfect wife and this perfect significant other, whatever it is. And I find that it was often us who did that, and other women around us that did that. And so, you know, I talk a lot about letting some of that go. We cannot be these perfect people. We can't be everything to everyone. We have to support one another, lift each other up as women, lift each other up as executives or whatever role you're in. But there is no have to. You don't have to become the director of advanced practice. You know, that was for me. You don't have to become the chief medical officer. That was for me. That doesn't mean that your journey or that you have to do anything. Don't put that on yourself, because it just causes undue stress. Live in that moment and find your joy, as you said, right? That's so important, is what brings you joy every day, you know, and find it and hang on to it. And that's how I try to find that little balance that I'm not quite sure is the truth, but we try to find it.
Yeah. I also think it's a constant state of flux, right? Things are changing, you know, in your personal life, in your professional life. And so it's a moving target that we're sort of aiming at the best we can. The one thing that I have sort of, as these opportunities and career transitions have come up, there's a lot of things that are very tempting, right? So someone's listening to this and they're saying, I could be the director of advanced practice at my network, right? And it's like a little light bulb goes off and they think, I could do that. And then if that is you, if you are listening and you're thinking, maybe that's for me, maybe I want to step into leadership, I would encourage you to think about, how would it feel to actually do that? What would my days look like? What would change? I would have to scale back clinically. How would that work? You know, and start to really think about the logistics, because I think the idea of something can be very sexy, right? Oh, the leader, right? The leader sounds great. What would that entail? Are you now answering emails at night? Or, you know, how would your life change? And is that what you want your life to feel like? Because if not, someone else can do that job. It doesn't necessarily have to be you.
Yeah. Well, and I would challenge whoever is thinking this, you should think, how can I be the next chief medical officer? Even bigger than the director of advanced practice. Maybe it's the chief of advanced practice. How am I the CEO? That's the thinking that I think we as PAs need to start thinking about. We have such tools and deep knowledge and experiences, and we can solve so many problems in healthcare. And maybe it's a position, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's through writing or blogging or being this clinician or researcher, whatever it is, right? But you're right. Don't think you have to, you know, do X. Understand what that means and the life that you want to live. But also recognize that, you know, you don't have to do any of those things if you don't want to. But you should be involved and you should be aware of them and that you can do them. Don't wait for someone to give you permission to do them. Just do them and just take it. And you can do that and really change all different, parts of your career, your life. And, you know, I will say also, and this is not, and maybe this is a little unorthodox, you know, I think people in medicine, I've seen people crumble. They go into medicine, they choose a path, they've put money, time, effort all the way through years and years and years, and all of a sudden they realize that they hate it. This isn't for me. And I don't know what to do. I've spent so much money and time and put my family through things. And it really, you know, I've seen some terrible outcomes from people who have experienced that. And I'm here to say, like, that's okay. Pick something different. If you don't want to be a PA anymore, or you don't want to be the chief medical officer anymore, like you can explore other options and your life is not over. And I've seen too many clinicians really fall apart that way. And you know, if you need to reach out to me, I'm here to talk to whoever that is from a mental health perspective. Because I think sometimes that happens to folks. And go find your joy. You want to go be a bartender or whatever you want to do. Like, we support that and no one will judge you for it. So, but you should find that joy and live the life that you want to live. And things may change, right? Like, here I am, I'm in my middle 40s and 3 kids in this big job, but now, you know, I have aging parents and, you know, my kids are teenagers and I have different stressors than I did 20 years ago. And, you know, I'm very lucky and I'm grateful for that, but life can change. And, you know, you got to do what makes you happy, honestly.
Most PAs bring home a decent paycheck, but aren't sure that they're investing enough or what approach to take for student loans. Kayla Pepperday is a certified financial planner who works specifically with APPs. Seeing that PAs, including his wife, were overlooked and physicians were treated with respect in the financial planning industry, he sought to rectify this mismatch by serving PAs with the excellence we deserve. Caleb's mission is to help make financial planning affordable for APPs regardless of their asset level. Head to advancedpracticeplanning.com and hit the schedule a conversation button to book your free consult. Your money is your largest wealth building tool, and failing to utilize it well could leave you wanting to retire without enough in your accounts or still having student loan payments when your kids are ready to attend college themselves. Caleb's clients can enjoy their money guilt-free while feeling confident in their savings and investments. Head to the show notes, tap the link, and call Caleb for your free consultation. On the call, Caleb will help you to determine whether his one-time or ongoing financial planning services are right for you. And I think there's this thing about medicine where, you know, as PAs, we just love the idea of the profession. We love that it was something we were called to do, but no profession, no job, no toxic work environment is worth the cost of your health and your sanity and your wellness as a person. And we are not saying that frequently enough or loudly enough or from a place of compassion where we say, hey, if this is not for you, all of us support you in finding what is good for you, what is safe for you, what is healthy, and what is something that's going to bring you the most fulfilling life possible. Because it's not always door number one. Sometimes it's door number 5. Like, sometimes we have to try a lot of different things before we figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you heard my story, right? I became a PA because I wanted to do clinical things. And look where that has led me. It's opened up possibilities and thoughts that I didn't think I would ever be in this position or in this leadership or leading, you know, operations and you know, at this level. But it did, and it's okay. And I love it. And that's the most important thing, I think, to your point. We stay with things because we think we have to, or I can't make it. I see a lot of moms, and I was going back to women, right? And what they experience. And I see women who are getting divorced and have young kids, or they don't know financially, like what they're going to do or how they're going to take care of themselves. And I can tell you, as someone who went through all of that, absolutely you can. I wasn't in the positions that I'm in now at the time, but you can make it through, you can do it, and you can change, and it's okay. You have to embrace the people around you. I had a really great support family and friends at the time. And you lean on them. It's okay to lean on people. I was the notorious never ask for help. I don't need anyone's help. I can do it all by myself. And it's a lesson in being vulnerable and reaching out and saying, I need you. I need your support. And that's what gets you through.
I once heard someone say, if you have a dear friend and you're not asking them for help when you're struggling, you are robbing that person of the opportunity to give you their love and use their strengths and talents to support you exactly the way that you would support them if they were going through a hard time. So to anyone who's struggling to ask for help, it is, there are people that love you that want to be there for you, no matter how hard it seems as, what you're walking through.
I'm very lucky in that sense. Fiance Kevin, he was there, I was president and chair of the board. I was in this transition. It was post pandemic and it was overwhelming. Right. I think without giving some of that to him to say, please help me, like I need your support. I don't think I would have done as well or ended up where I'm at without him during that time. But it took effort to say, hey, I am not that all, everything woman that everybody thinks that I am. Like, I need you to help me here and like be this shoulder to cry on, lean on, run things by. And that's so important for everybody, whoever that person is for you.
Yeah. So I would love for you to talk to the listener who is like, CMO of the APA or CEO, CMO of my organization feels like a little bit of a stretch during the season that I'm in. How can I have an impact? How can I create change within my local, culture or healthcare system at a state or a federal level? What should the average listener who's practicing clinically know about what's going on inside of those realms?
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is every single person can have an impact, no matter who you are. You don't, you said it, Tracy, right? Is you don't have to be the CEO or the CMO to have an impact. It will lead you different places. But what you do need to do is you need to be aware of what's going on in healthcare, not just in your small space, right, that you live in or your small medical center. You have to look outside, right? And really the servant leader type of mentality of what's going on in my community? What's going on outside these walls? What's going on with people that I know? And having that awareness and then understanding that you are a powerful voice as a PA, right? And you having that knowledge and that patient-facing piece to bring back to decision makers, right? And I talk often about empowering the front line. I'm not on the front line anymore, right? I'm not at the bedside in the hospital system as I was many years ago. So how do we expect leaders, whether it's in the government or policymakers or whoever, to make decisions without speaking to them? And so as PAs, we really have to start talking to people. Stop asking permission, talk about what is good for patients and really continue to be that voice for patients, for our communities, for ourselves, and just get to know people, right? Go down and meet those decision makers. They make decisions on all kinds of things every day, right? And I live in advocacy land, so they're making decisions about street signs to healthcare to, financial, whatever you know, how much wheat we sell down in Southern Illinois, you know, where I am, I don't know, but they can't be expected to know everything about everything. You are the experts. PAs are experts in medicine, 100%. And so share your expertise, share it. You don't have to ask permission. Are there people who have more experience or expertise than me? Absolutely. In all kinds of things. That will always be, I hope so. But yeah, you're the expert. Talk about it, whether it's clinical research, advocacy, patient care, inefficiencies. You have the ability to change the world, even if it's in your own clinic, if that's where you need to start, if it's at home, right? How do I, you know, I got to take care of all my kids and I got to figure out some strategy to take care of them. Wherever that is, you have that ability as PAs to make an impact. But you have to be involved. You have to. There are 170,000 PAs in this country, and we have to talk to one another and interact with one another better than what we do, and get involved in what's going on in our states and in our communities. And I think too few PAs do that. And I know a lot that do, but we need to do it better. Same thing for education, preceptorship, students. We got to talk about it in our PA programs. We're growing, but who's our largest group of growing PAs? It's our young PAs coming out of PA school. So the fastest growing numbers, and who's going to mentor them? We have to mentor them, talk about this and the things that they need to be, you know, thinking about. Cause right now they're just like, oh my gosh, I'm just trying to like figure out how to take the right H&P, right? And you know, but we have to be here to support them and help them understand what goes on in medicine.
And I would say to raise your hand and speak up and say something and walk in the room and go to the committee meeting before you feel ready. So you don't need a fully formulated plan for everything and the implementation down to how it's going to roll out. You really need an idea, an opinion, which you already have because it's the thing that you came home and complained about last week, right? So these are things that are happening inside of your clinic to your patients where you're saying, it's so frustrating that when I refer to this person, it gets lost and I have to call, you know, that's a problem that you can solve and that you know how to solve better than anyone else because it's a problem that you are having with your patients. So it doesn't have to be a PowerPoint and a, you know, 13-point plan, you know.
Just the act of showing up shows that you care and demonstrates people get to know you. People that relationship building is so important to drive change. You have to build the relationships to make a difference in the organization. It's, you know, it's often about who you know, and that's a true statement. So you as a PA getting to know other people and other leaders, whether you agree or don't agree, you know, talk to those folks, take them to coffee. You know, hey, I'd like to hear your thoughts. You know, I know we have a lot of the same challenges. I would love to hear what your thoughts are. And, you know, propose. Don't be afraid. I have failed more times than I can count. You cannot be afraid of failure. I mean, it's a true statement. You can't learn unless we fail. And so you have to be vulnerable. You have to put yourself out there. I've learned that from people who've mentored me. And you have to be okay with that. And that's the only way to keep moving forward. Try. And I would rather see you try than not try. So, you know, be there, lend your voice. Step up. You don't have to have this high ranking position. Just show up. And it shows that you care about what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we are an inherently passionate group and we care deeply about these things. And I think where we stumble is how to take that action, where to go. So if someone is saying, I feel real frustrated about something in my health system, but I work in an ancillary office, I'm outpatient, I am not invited to a committee meeting, or I don't even know what committee to look for. What can that person do to try and figure out what path do I take to get at the table or in the meeting or on the email that seems to be coming out about this thing?
Yeah. You ask and you talk to, whether that's your direct manager, maybe it's other PAs, maybe it's a nurse, maybe it's an administrator, whoever you work with, and say, hey, you know, is there any way at the next meeting I could be involved? Or what do we have types of meetings like this? But you have to ask. People cannot read your mind, right? And no one is going to tell you. I will say as someone who had, hundreds of people that I was responsible for, and we would hire new PAs and APRNs that would come in, and I would meet with them after 30 days or 60 days and say, how's it going? And they'd say, well, I'm really frustrated. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, nobody told me how to do this. Nobody told me what to do. And I said, did you have that expectation that someone was going to tell you what to do or where to go? And they said, well, kind of. And I said, well, actually, think about it in the reverse. If you had just sent me an email or said, hey, could I talk to you? It doesn't, it's very small. It doesn't have to be intentional about, like, I have this problem in the clinic. Nobody wants their first encounter to be solve my problem, right? Jen, people call me Jen, I have a problem. Okay, well, that's true. How about, Jen, I would love to get to know you more. Let's have a cup of coffee. I could just share a little bit about myself. It's that relationship that's so important. So that's where you start. Hey, could you share with me how to find this policy? Or could you share with me who's in charge of quality improvement? Whatever the issue is, or just getting to know people. I can't tell you, just sending an introduction, if you thought about it right now, if I challenged every single person right now, write an email to your chief medical officer or your CEO, whoever, in your organization and introduce yourself. Hey, I just want to let you know, I'm Jenna Roscoe. I'm a PA. I work over here. I see all these patients. I work in vascular surgery. I just want to say that I appreciate you and what you're doing. And I would, love to have a cup of coffee and understand some of the organization's priorities this year. That's it. Doesn't have to be anything. Hi, just want to let you know that I'm here. Just that act it is huge. I used to send the CEO a note every once in a while because I knew the CEO before he was the CEO. Fantastic physician at my former place of employment, and all he did was get emails from people with complaints. And, you just knew. I used to feel so bad. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine the emails that this man would get. And so every once in a while, I would just shoot him an email to say, hey, I just want to say you're doing an awesome job. And it makes a huge impact. And he'd say, oh, every once in a while you'd email me and it would remind me that I have good people working for me. So think about that. Don't always send your complaints to people. Send them a little note that says, hey, I just want to say, like, thanks for all the work you're doing. And, hey, want to have coffee? Come by my office. I would love to talk to you sometime. Those little things go a long way and help you build those relationships. So when you do need something, hey, could you help me? I have this problem in the clinic. Oh, yeah, sure. I know this person, and that person.
Yep. I have a surgeon that would say that's good for morale, right? He just would say that's good for morale to say, first, I'm going to cultivate a relationship with you before I ask you to, it's just more wholesome and more of a connection than transactional, right? I need something from you. Please help me with this.
Yeah, that is a great way to explain it, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this has been really, really lovely. If people are listening and thinking, I need more of Jen in my life, how can I connect with her? How can I find out what's happening over at the AAPA? Where are the best places for them to go?
Yeah, no, you can find us on the website, or you can send me an email, jroscoe@aapa.org. My door is always open. We're working on so many things. And really, as at the Academy, and part of my goal is to say, where are we going? We're growing. We're growing as a profession. We're growing as an Academy. And for me, it's where the sky's the limit for the Academy. And how do we grow and really highlight and showcase PAs as experts, not only in health and hospital systems, but also in their community and solving some of the biggest healthcare issues out there. And so my hope is to partner with people, systems, corporate, you know, whoever's out there to drive access, innovation, and health equity and community. I mean, these are the things that are important to us. PAs, we have to remove every barrier for PAs. Healthcare can't afford these barriers anymore. And we have to start removing every tether. It's the only way forward. There are 100 million people in this country without access to care and 150 million without access to mental health care. And we can't afford to operate like this. We have an aging population, 80 million people are going to be over the age of 65 in the next 20 years. How are we going to take care of all of them? And PAs are part of that answer, and they are a huge part of that answer. So we have to start being involved, using our voice, because we're experts. And I want to see every single one of you. I'd love to learn all about you. Feel free. You can find me all over the place, I'm sure. And just come to the website, find us on social, and send me an email. Would love to hear from you.
Yeah. This has been such a great discussion. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I love any discussion that reminds us to zoom out from our current job, our current practice, the current location that we practice medicine, and see the systems and processes and things on a much bigger scale. Anytime we have a conversation that encourages you to look for opportunities to make an impact, to get involved, to raise your hand, to ask questions, and to stop asking for permission to be a part of the conversation is just certainly a reminder that we all need. I hope that this episode was inspiring and encouraging to you. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to another episode of The PA Is In. That's all for now. This PA is out. Congratulations. You've just joined an awesome club. By listening to a full episode of The PA Is In, you are officially on the Unicorn PA team. Welcome aboard. What most team members do is they subscribe to the podcast because that allows them to automatically get the latest episode of the show. The life of your dreams exists on the other side of taking action. Keep making small shifts and keep getting better. Your life will improve, your career will soar, and you will have the confidence you need to create your own success. I will see you in the next episode. This PA is out.